So how big is the group? How many people do you have?
I think presently for this year, we have about 24 members that have paid their dues and other ones are coming in. We usually are about in the 30 to 32 range. We're just going to start our classes tomorrow for 2019. We don't know yet how many people might be coming to that. We could have a class size up into the 20 range. It might not be that large. So we're not a large group, but we like to have say we have a large impact. Over, we started in 2011, and since then we've had roughly, I think we're in the about 10,000 to 12,000 volunteer hours, which is a couple of man hours for the Fish and Game Department and the other organizations in the area overall. So we have a reasonably large impact for such a small group.
So speaking of the classes that are coming up just this weekend, now this is for folks that are already members, but I think it would be useful, instructive to the listeners to know a little bit more about the kinds of topics that you're going to be talking about. It's a pretty diverse range of topics that are coming up over the next couple of days. So, Pat, why don't you fill us in on that?
Okay, yes. As Clem mentioned, I'm the chairperson this year for education. And as he mentioned also, the 40 hours of training that we ask people to do, that's the first year. In subsequent years, they only need to do 8 years to remain their certification, remain certified. This year, we start...
As mentioned, we start tomorrow with introductory type things. What are naturalists, American naturalists? There's a statewide chapter curriculum. We actually have 8 chapters in the state. And up here at Sandpoint and Lewiston are the only North Idaho ones. And the closest one to Lewiston is McCall. So all the rest are in the southern part. They're talking about doing a chapter in Coeur d'Alene, but it's not open yet. We do have some members from the Coeur d'Alene area. And some of the new members who've expressed interest in coming to our class this year will be from the Coeur d'Alene area as well. Classes that we start tomorrow, are, as I mentioned, are primarily just introductory. We're going to have Fish and Game representative there to talk about the what their sponsorship is about and how they view the program. They give us a great deal of support. And then we'll have a potluck dinner afterwards where we get all the new members there and kind of do a social hour with them, with a lot of the existing members who are going to be there tomorrow as well. And then Saturday morning, tomorrow's class starts at 1 o'clock. Saturday morning at 9, we have 2 sessions, management and restoration of Bull River and other projects that have been done by the Lower Clark Fork Watershed Group. Britta Olson is going to talk about that. There's a Vermilion River over past Trout Creek in Montana that they've done some restoration as well, rebuilding, re-dumping a lot of gravel and putting logs in to help for some additional habitat for fish. And then we're going to have Molly McCann of the Lakes Commission talk to us after that about the regional land use concerns in the area. And then from there we go to, in general, it's every other Thursday and Saturday. Thursday afternoon at 1, Saturday at 9, typically. We'll have a lot of field trips included this year, and many of those are that I'm very excited about because, as Clem mentioned, we have a wide variety of different types of classes that we do. We're going to have Tony Lewis talk to us on April 4th about the Ice Age floods that happened from the Missoula floods and the ice dam that was at the mouth of the Clark Fork River that broke many times. Some people say it's 40 or more times. And we'll do a field trip with that one as well. We have some in our Water Life Discovery Center classes coming up on April 6th and the 18th. We have mammals and elk survival coming up in May 2nd on those dates. And then we also start getting into more of the field trips after that. One of the classes that we've arranged on May 11th, is with Chris Schnepf of the U of I Extension Forestry Group. He's an educator with them and a very knowledgeable on anything related to forests. So we've got a class on identifying Idaho's trees. And then we're going to do the Big Burn video, which is a Ken Burns video about the fires in 1910 in North Idaho area in western Montana. And then talk about the changes in how they fight forest fires over the last century. We'll have a trip to the fish hatchery at Cabinet Gorge following that. We have a local plant identification class and field trip. Fish and Game has a project up in the north part of Boundary County near the border with Canada called Bees to Bears. It's a lot about collecting seeds and how they get more flowers there, and kind of the food chain from getting bees up to bears and things. So we'll have that class. Into May, June 1st, we're going to have a bats and birds classes, field trip down in Coeur d'Alene. And then we have a geology field trip on June 7th. It's going up north towards the Bonner's Ferry area. And Jim Richardson is a retired geologist in the area, and he's going to take us on that field trip. That's open to the public. We have several open to the public classes in May and June primarily. And those are some that we're really excited about sharing with everybody. So,
as Pat said, some of these classes are open to the public, and we'll have them advertised around or in Sandpoint Online. And other ones are only available because of our limited class size and our classroom size to people that have actually signed up to take the course. But I would like to say, Chris, that if your listeners would like to contact us, they can contact us at imn.sandpoint@gmail.com. That'll go directly to one of the officers of the Master Naturalist organization. Or if you're interested in seeing what's going online, we have a calendar that's at www.idahomasternaturalist.org. And that's on the Fish and Game website. And we keep a calendar there of all these dates that Chris was talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yes, what a diverse bunch of subjects you guys are dealing with having to do with our natural world out there. I did want to swing back, though, and ask you a little bit more about the Wildlife Discovery Center. That's a great facility. I've been out there. And tell us a little bit more about how the public can enjoy that.
Well, the public can enjoy it by just coming out and walking the trails and going to the lakeshore. I think it's one of the undiscovered places here around in Sandpoint. About in 2015, we reorganized the interior of the building and put in educational exhibits, usually aimed more at 12 and under, but adults tend to get a lot out of it too. There's trails across the street on Lakeshore that the public can walk. There's signage explaining things about the pond. We have a viewing pond, if you've been out there, where we have trout in. Now, a couple years ago, we had big trout, and people used to come out and give us a quarter at a time to feed the trout. And we we made like $20 on a weekend because people were feeding those trout so much. But we are trying to rebuild up that population, trout population in the pond, because we had to drain it. We had water problems. We had to redo the water problems. But we have a brochure, and I have it here holding it up to your microphone so your viewers can see it. But it's about the WDC, the Wildlife Discovery Center, and the Master Naturalist Program. It's available at the Wildlife Discovery Center and also at the Chamber of Commerce building as you come into town. We try to keep that stocked. And it tells the public what the WDC is about, has an interior map, and also about what the Master Naturalists are about. So we welcome people, especially during the summers. I believe it's starting, and Pat can correct me, June 10th from 9 to 1. We're going to have our docents out there Monday through Friday from that June 10th to August 26th or something. And so people could come out. If you have any questions, we're there to interact with them, try to answer it. If we can't, we know the experts. We believe we know the experts that can. Mm-hmm. And we're more than willing to call up our Fish and Game friends and ask them what people have seen. Because we do get people come in with plants and say, what's this? Or show us a picture on their iPhone about some animal and what is that? So we enjoy doing that and interacting with the public that way.
You're the answer people.
Well, we try to be. So we're not... We're still learning too. That's the whole thing about this course. It's not that we teach people everything they know about nature to be a naturalist. But we hope we stimulate them that they'll, if they find something of interest like mushrooms, they'll go out and study that and develop that expertise themselves.
Sure. I'm just curious. So, Pat, how did you get involved with the naturalist program? Do you have a science background, or what interest led you to get involved?
I actually moved here back to Sandpoint about 2.5 years ago. I grew up in the area, but most of my adult life I was working in Houston, Texas, in the oil and gas business. Once I got here, the first event I went to was the Kokanee Run that they do at that we do annually at the Trestle Creek area,
which is an amazing thing. You can go see these. Yeah. The Trestle Creek's just full of these red fish. They're going up to spawn. Yeah.
That's right. People go to Alaska to see sockeye, and we have the landlocked sockeye right here. It's amazing.
They're a little smaller than the Alaskan ones, I think. But yes, so I started there, and that got me interested, and I decided to join last year. So this is only my second year in the program, and I went through the training last year, and Mary Haley, who is our president this year. I think Clem was president forever, it seemed. She asked me to be the chairperson of education this year, so that's how I'm gotten involved with getting the classes lined up for this year.
Yeah. Same question to you, Clem. So how did you get involved with it? And what's your background? Did you come to it with a science background?
Actually, I guess I did. I had my career as a research scientist at Pacific Northwest National Laboratories. And my wife and I, we retired up here. Like lots of people, we owned our property up here for many, many years. We retired, and we were looking for a way for us to give back and learn more as from coming into the area. We wanted to learn more about it. And so the naturalists just melded with our wants and desires perfectly.
Mm-hmm. But you don't have to have a science background. I imagine you have people from all different
walks of life. No, you don't. Yeah. We do. And like I said, our goal is not to teach them everything they need to know. We're just trying to pique their interest that they'll go out and do it themselves. Mm-hmm. And like an adult education, continuing education course. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, Clem Yonker and Pat Myers, thank you again for coming in. You're with the Poundre chapter of the Idaho Master Naturalist. And can you give us again the contact information if people want to get in touch to learn more and maybe join?
I'll be glad to, Chris. And thanks for having us this morning and allowing us to talk to you. Again, to contact us, the Master Naturalist, our email address is imn.sandpoint@gmail.com. Or you can go on the Idaho Fish and Game website and find out more about the Master Naturalist program. And our calendar is there, and that address is www.idahomasternaturalist.org. And the Idaho Master Naturalist is all one word.
Yeah. And as you mentioned, Pat, you do have public events that anybody can come to if you want to just check it out and see if it develops your interest. And those are posted periodically via Sandpoint Online or other places where you might see the community calendars.
Right. That's right. Yep.
So, okay. Well, thanks again for coming in.
And thank you very much, Chris.
We're going to take a short musical break here, and then we're going to come back and speak with Mandy Evans and Steve Nybank from the Panhandle Animal Shelter. There's a lot going on there. And before we get there, we're going to play a song that is kind of about a cat. It might be about a cat. It's called He's a Catch by Donya Clarine, and that'll bring us up to the Panhandle Animal Shelter segment here. So we'll be back in just a moment. And that was Donya Clarine with He's a Cat. Speaking of cats and dogs and such things, we have with us now Mandy Evans, Executive Director of the Panhandle Animal Shelter. Mandy, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
And Steve Nybank, he's the Pondere Dog Park Project Manager, and that's a big project that the Animal Shelter has coming. It's in midst of right now.
Yes. And
you have a lot of other things going on. You have stuff happening with the Thrift Shore. You have an event. You have the Home to Home, which is a cool national project. I hardly know where to jump in, but I think starting with the dog park, it might be a good place.
That sounds good.
So, Steve, tell us what is the dog park? Where is it, and what's going on?
Well, the dog park is just west of the shelter on Kootenai Cutoff Road. And it's about 2 acres of land, and it's designed basically to be a ADA-friendly park with a surface that will have low pathogens, low dust, and be year-round accessible, and people will be able to go in with their dogs and stay clean and leave there versus having a mud hole to go into that would be very common if we just had dirt or grass or something like that.
So what kind of surface is that, a low pathogen surface?
It's a pea gravel, 4 inches of pea gravel. We're getting it out of the Spokane aquifer. It's washed, it's round, approximately 1/4 inch, 3/8 inch, and it makes kind of a soft, sandy type of surface that'll stay clean.
And so how far along are we now in the development of the park?
Well, we are just about ready to break ground. Everything is ready except for the soil. The soil has to firm up now and consolidate a little bit more. The snow melt is just... has just left us a little bit of mud on the surface. The ground is defrosting nicely. I was out there the other day walking through it, and I think within a week or so, we hopefully will be able to actually get the equipment in there and go to work.
That is if we don't have a third winter this year.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true.
It is supposed to rain a little bit this weekend. I'm sorry to, I know, bring that news to you, but in general, I think March is going out like a lamb, right? Like it's supposed to. That's what I hope. So I'm looking at a schematic, a drawing you have of the dog park. So there, it looks like there's like two areas in it.
Yep.
How's it work? How does somebody bring their dog when it gets going? And I guess primary question would be, is it open all the time?
Yeah, so it will be open all the time. And if you look over at our thrift store when you're driving by, and just to the left of it is that big open lot. And that big open lot is actually part of our parcel, the shelter's parcel. And so we're thinking, what are we going to do with this land that serves the community and isn't just wasted space? And so we created the dog park. So when you pull in to the thrift store, if you go to the left, we are going to be paving that into a larger parking lot. And then you would walk up, and there to the left side of the park will be a small dog area. And then the right side is a larger dog park area for big dogs. But there will be in pens and out pens, so you can go and unleash your dog and let it into the proper area. And then there's seating and shaded areas and comfort for the people, too.
So are there, like, rules of the road here that you want users to observe? You can't bring an aggressive dog, probably.
Right.
How about, are there other rules? I don't know how a dog park works.
Well, we will have a peeing post, so we'll request that the dogs use the peeing post before entering into the park.
The welcome post,
yeah. But that's easy. You can welcome a dog just by having another dog pee on it. And then just making sure that the best case scenario is that people go in, that they don't bring food or even really toys can sometimes be a deterrent or an issue with dog fights, and that they're being responsible and respectful by making sure their animals are vaccinated and that they're cleaning up after their animals and keeping the park open and clean for everybody.
Will there be volunteers that are kind of dedicated to park operations?
Yeah, the nice part about this whole project is the partnership between us and the city of Ponderay. So as an animal shelter, we really don't have the capacity to operate a dog park. So we're acting as the fiscal party to raise the money for the park. And then with Steve taking charge, he'll manage the construction of the park and has really managed the whole thing. And then it will be handed over to the city of Ponderay, who will then add it to their parks program. And they'll be responsible for anything that happens with the park, the maintenance, and collecting volunteers to help.
So let's talk about that raising money part. How is it funded, and are you still looking for funding to help bring it to fruition?
We are still looking for funding, but a lot of individual donors have stepped up. But the best thing is people will send us $2 because they just want the dog park, and that's what they can afford. And then Steve's been doing a fantastic job, really been impressed with the suppliers in our area and the discounts and donations that they've made to make this park happen. They're really the primary source, I think, of the funding at this point is just those discounts.
We have about 52 suppliers and contractors that have stepped up to help us out, from Bonner's Ferry Trust Company, all the way to Spokane Valley, that are supplying materials and have donated either both labor and materials to help us get this park together. So it's been a great project. The community has just jumped in and said, we want to be part of this. And the need has been shown to be there just tremendously. So we're really on track to have it happen.
So Steve, how did you get involved? You're a volunteer.
Well, yeah, I'm totally a volunteer. I wanted a park. I wanted to see a park happen in this community. We've been trying to do something for so many years. And just by pure luck, I met Mandy, and Mandy said, we're working on this idea. And I asked if I could step in and go into it and see what I could do. I had looked at about 30 parks around the country, from 2,000 square foot parks in downtown New York and Manhattan to 40-acre ocean parks, oceanfront parks in Florida, to large water parks, et cetera, in the Midwest, and came up with ideas observing other parks and how dogs related in the parks and how people related to other people in the parks, and kind of broke down an idea of what would fit our community, what our community would really need for the land that we had that was available. And this just worked out so perfectly. We managed to put something together that, being a totally ADA-friendly park, we didn't just want to make it for some people in the community. We wanted to make it for all people. Young people that can be safe there, people in wheelchairs, people that have compromised immune issues, they can enjoy the park as well and be healthy and be safe.
So you're breaking ground as soon as you can,
yep.
Sounds like. When do you think it'd be in operation?
Well, we're shooting for the end of June.
Oh, very soon.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it should happen. Yeah. When it happens, it should happen very quickly. Yeah. We're very fortunate. Scott Dempsey Construction is going to step in and do the heavy lifting for us. We have Lipper Construction that's actually going to cut the properties. And by doing this work all at once, we should be able to knock it out very quickly.
Yeah.
And the community, we know that this is, I mean, it's been a phenomenal opportunity and really fun to see all the different community members coming out in support of the dog park. But we realize that not everybody can make those big dollar contributions. So we're partnering with Sweet Lou's on April 9th. They are going to be doing I guess 20% of the proceeds that night will go back to the dog park. So if you want to support the dog park, you can simply just go have dinner at Sweet Lou's on April 9th.
It's a pretty easy way to support something.
I know. It's my favorite way to support something.
Okay, that's great. So, and if you want to find out more about this, or you want to volunteer or donate,
yeah, give us a call at the shelter. It's 208-265-7297.
Or go to PASIdaho.org.
Yes.
Right? That's your website.
Yeah.
There's information there.
Well, there's not, I can't say there's information on the website right now. Our website, embarrassingly, needs to be updated, but Facebook. Okay. We're really great on Facebook, and we do have people answering our Facebook Messenger regularly.
Okay, so that's the Ponderay Dog Park, very great addition to the infrastructure of our town for dog lovers. We have a lot of dog lovers here, don't we?
Oh, we do.
Boy. We sure do. Yes. In fact, I saw a statistic, and who knows if these statistics are completely accurate, but that Idaho has the highest per capita dog ownership of any state.
Really?
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah. So that's a real statistic I saw somewhere. I'll have to dig it up and send it to you.
Yeah, that's great.
So, Mandy, tell what else is going on with the shelter that you want to tell listeners about?
Oh, my gosh. There's always so much going on. But let me touch base really quick on the thrift store. If anyone has noticed that big building going up next to our building, it is a new sorting facility. So about 3 years ago, we expanded our sales floor and moved the back room off-site. And we have been doing a capital campaign to raise the funds to build this building. And it is now there. It's really exciting for us to be having the whole team back on site. And then this weekend is Tour to Thrift. So for all those shopping lovers, Tour to Thrift is a fun event where 8 different thrift stores come together on Saturday. You can get a passport at one of the participating stores. And you go around, you get stamped, and you can be put into a drawing for $200 gift certificates to Super One or a night stay at the Coeur d'Alene Casino. Plus, everybody has discounts. I can try to go through the list. I know it's the Panhandle Animal Shelter Thrift Store. Okay. At Secondary Seconds, Goodwill, The Cove, the one right next to The Cove, sorry, whoever that is, that I'm not remembering, Bazaar Bazaar, and I believe Azalea Handmade or Handpicked, and I do apologize to anybody that I have forgotten.
But that's happening this weekend.
This weekend,
so
on
visit
Saturday.
Your favorite thrift store or all of them.
Yeah, it's amazing. A lot of people go to all of them. I'm very impressed by that. Mm-hmm. And then on April 25th, it kicks off our official Yappy Hour season. We will be at Laughing Dog Brewing from 4 to 7. Bring your dogs down, have a beer, celebrate.
And so, what is Yappy Hour?
Yappy Hour is happy hour for you and your dog. Or if you have a crazy dog and you just like to watch dogs, you can just come and without your dog and enjoy
all
the environment.
The whole dog scene here in Sandpoint. How many people do you get? And how many dogs do you get?
We have at least, I'd say, 50 to 7,500 people, depending on the event. Yeah. And, you know, the thing, too, is I want people to realize that the idea of an aggressive dog, it's usually people aren't bringing their dog knowing their dog doesn't like other dogs because they don't want to have to deal with that either. It's that dogs have different play styles, and you get them into a group, and if one is a more aggressive play style and they're trying to play with one that isn't, that's how a fight can happen, is just not matching those play styles. And so the team is there to kind of help monitor that and maybe tell somebody whose dog might be a little bit more hyper that they should maybe leave, depending on the environment. But it's not like there's people out there saying, I'm going to bring my aggressive dog today.
That's not happening. But it is a great opportunity for people to let their dogs socialize.
Oh, gosh, yes. Yeah. And we are, you know, as a sheltering as a whole, nationally, we are seeing dogs coming into the shelters that have more behavior issues. And I think it's definitely attributed to the fact that we have two income households now, less time to spend with our dogs. And really, when you pay attention to your dog, if he's being naughty, it's probably because he's not getting enough.
He's looking for attention.
Yeah. Like my dog steals pens out of my hands if I'm not paying attention. And I know it's because she has to get outside.
Yeah. Yeah. That's how they communicate. One of the ways they communicate anyways. I know that Pan Alma Shelter also has a helpline.
Yes.
Tell us what's going on with your helpline.
So our helpline, a few years ago, we were getting a good number of owner surrenders, so we started two new programs. One of them was the helpline, where people can give us a call, and you can reach the helpline just by calling that main number, the 208-265-7297. But really, people feel like they don't know what their options are, and so they'll end up surrendering their pet to the shelter when it might have been something that could have been helped. Or let's say their cat has, you know, I've had this cat for 15 years, and he's peeing all over the place now, and I can't handle it, so I'm bringing him to you. And then on the helpline, we're able to say, well, have you taken your cat to the vet? It might be a urinary tract infection, and just troubleshooting issues with people so that they don't have to give up their pet. The goal is to try to keep pets in homes rather than trying to rehome them. And then we started the home-to-home program. And so home-to-home is a website where people who need to surrender their pet or rehome their pet can do that by posting a brief profile and picture on our home-to-home page. And then we share that post with members of our Facebook community to try to help that owner rehome rather than having to surrender it to the shelter. When we launched that program, we ran it for about 3 to 6 months and realized, wow, like we reduced our intake, our owner surrender intake by 31%. And it was just the helpline and home to home. And so we launched it nationally. And now we're in 10 states and we have 12 different shelters that have home to home pages.
So that's kind of an amazing story right there. So the advantage to the person that is looking to rehome their pet is you save your pet all this stress of going into a shelter environment.
Absolutely. And I mean, just the person as well. I think that we tend to unintentionally or intentionally demonize people for the decisions that they have to make when they don't really feel like they have a choice. And just looking at elderly when they have to be put into, or they don't have to be put, when they have to go into assisted living, and they can't bring their pet with them, that is extremely traumatic. And if we can lessen that by a pet going from one home to another, that's a great gift for the pet and the owner.
Mm-hmm. You talked a little bit about how that works, but you go to a website. What's your web address?
The web address for the overall site is www.home-home.org. And for the Panhandle Animal Shelter site, it's pas.home-home.org.
And when you get there, it's pretty easy to see where you click on a button if you need to surrender a pet or try to rehome a pet, try to find a pet, a new home. But then you can also go there to look for pets.
Oh, yes.
So how's that advantageous for somebody that's looking to get a pet to look there first, maybe before they come into the shelter?
You know, we get some really fantastic animals on home to home. So that's, I would say, I mean, one nice thing is that you're getting direct information from that owner, where when you come to the shelter, if it was a stray that came in, we're going to do the best we can to give you what we know about the animal from the brief time we have them. But to get that one-on-one real life experience is invaluable. And then, funny enough, we get, I don't think we really expected this when we started it, but we get crazy animals. We've had a tarantula posted, a Savannah cat, fish. We had fish adopted off of home to home.
So how did the tarantula get adopted?
It did right away. Like I was so grossed out. I couldn't believe it. There were so many people who wanted this tarantula, hamsters, guinea pigs, anything that's legal can be posted.
Is a tarantula a good pet?
I don't know. I wouldn't want it.
To some people, I guess.
Yeah,
they're very fragile and I don't know. And hairy. I couldn't deal with it. But we had a horse. A horse was
Kidding. Okay.
Rehomed. So yeah, it's really been.
What was it, like an old horse? Or what was the horse's story?
I can't remember. It was somebody who has cattle and it might be. I mean, I've just learned this that horses, if you bring a horse, there'll be a lot of stress on that horse if it doesn't meld in with the rest of the, I don't know what you call that.
Herd?
A herd, yeah, of horses. And so that could have been the reason. I'm not 100% sure, but she was very pleased with the process and the people who came forward that were interested in the horse.
Okay. Anything else you want to say about Home to Home? This is a program that you piloted here locally, but as you mentioned, it's kind of expanding around the country.
It is, and we're about to head over to the Humane Society of the United States Expo. It's the largest animal welfare expo in the world, and we'll have a booth there. And then I'll be speaking twice at the expo too on, a lot of shelters are still euthanizing. And so they feel really stuck. Like, what do I do? We've got all these animals coming in, and a lot of those are inner surrenders. And what happens is then they get mad at the person surrendering because, we're having to clear space, which means we're euthanizing and you're bringing your animal in. So this product or this service is really wonderful for them because it allows them an opportunity to provide a solution that's excellent customer service, and then thereby reducing their intake so that they're able to free up some space in the shelter.
And so where is this convention or conference happening?
In New Orleans.
Oh, darn. You'll have to go to New Orleans.
Yeah, but it's exhausting. I'm like, can we have any fun?
Yeah.
I'm going to see.
That's the way the business trips usually go. They sound good on paper, don't they? That I'm going to a neat place.
Well, and before when we would just attend as attendees, but we're literally attending as attendees and exhibitors. And so it becomes just a lot, but it's exciting.
Right. So where are some of the other shelters that are on the Home to Home program now?
We have one, I believe it's New York, Florida, California, Ohio, Mississippi, and I think we have one in Virginia. Honestly,
all around the country. That's the basic fact there.
Yeah.
And it does seem like the kind of a no-brainer program. If you operated a shelter, why wouldn't you want to try to, lessen the animal intake and lessen the stress on the owners and lessen the stress on the animals? Does it require some convincing on your part to talk to other shelter managers that, hey, this is a great thing?
Yeah, for sure. So for me, it's kind of fun because now I'm talking to shelters at least 2 to 3 a week, and shelter. So we're under a lot of pressure a lot of the time too, because we're a nonprofit. So not shelters are usually understaffed and underfunded. And so then you have people who are doing multiple jobs. They're really, and all they're focused on is life savings. So when you come to them and you say, I have a program and you're going to have to work a little bit more, but in the end it will reduce your work. That is a big sell for them because it just is too much for them to think about. So the other thing too is that I think they come off sometimes as thinking that we're trying to sell them on something when it's like, no, we actually have done it. It works. So it does take some convincing. And the other unfortunate part about animal welfare is that you have a lot of people who are very passionate about rescuing these animals and saving them. And so even when shelters are doing the right things, they'll be beat up for it. So it creates an environment of fear. And so then you're working through that fear with these leaders in shelters to say, no, trust me, it's going to be okay. So their fear would be, well, who's controlling this process? Wait, the community is? Like, okay, so does that mean that this is not going to go well and it's going to turn around on us and hurt us? So it does take some... It does take some convincing, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's the kind of thing that might, have some seeds out there that suddenly, burst into bloom and it takes off in a big way because it does seem like such an obviously good idea.
I'm hoping so. Someone, Dr. Pisano, who goes into shelters, is a consultant for shelters and wrote the shelters best practice book, which we're in for Home to Home. And what she said is this idea of what we're doing is disrupting the sheltering world. And the main concept is just the idea that it's kind of always looked at it as like the shelter is supposed to be controlling animal welfare or being a main part of it, where we're saying, no, why exclude the community? Our community loves their animals. Why not allow them to play a role in animal welfare?
Mm-hmm. And to see more about that, you can go to the website home-home.org and check it out. So other things happening with the shelter?
We have the Humane Society of the United States visiting our shelter right now, which is really cool. We're starting a Pets for Life program. Pets for Life is this amazing outreach program that allows one of our staff to go door to door. So we are targeting neighborhoods in Pend'Oreille first and offering free services and support to those owners, just showing them that we're here to help them and support them.
So you knock on the door, and you don't know if they even have a pet.
Nope, you're just saying hi, and then if they have pets, you're really, it's relationship building is the primary focus, and then if they would like help, we're here to provide that to them.
So help might be
spaying and neutering.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes minor medical. We realize that people, not from a lack of desire, just may not have the resources or even know the resources exist. So that's why this program is important, to go in and educate people on, not that they're doing anything wrong, but just that we're there. It's just to let people know that we're here to serve them.
Mm-hmm.
So most of our work is in these safety net programs now. We help over, I think it's 3,500 animals a year just in our safety net programs that allow animals to stay in their homes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, head it off before it comes to a situation where they come to the shelter and then you have to try to rehome them, or you're a no-kill shelter.
Right.
Yeah. So that is a – what's your population right now?
We actually – I walked by the cat rooms on Tuesday. We have no cats.
No kidding.
I know. Huh. I was completely floored. That might happen once a year, which is just the precursor to what is to come, which will be a cat extravaganza, I'm sure. We have 19 dogs in the building, and I believe the majority of them have holds on them. We're altering them all on Friday, and then they'll go home on Saturday.
Hey, that's the perfect success story right there, is keeping animals in good homes. What is the no shame policy?
Our no shame policy is that, especially for people on Facebook, is if what you have to say is shaming somebody and adds literally no value to the situation, we'll remove your post. And that we don't believe that shaming people helps in any way, shape, or form. So we don't allow it.
So this is on the Pan Elma Shelter Facebook page. You have a lot of likes and followers there.
Yes.
How many?
I haven't looked at it for a while. Over 11,000 or 12,000. Yeah.
It's a big number for a small town. It's more than the population standpoint right there.
Well, and the no shame policy, and what we have nicely written on, it's on our home to home page so that other shelters can cut and paste it. We started this about 3 years ago, where we just said, what is the purpose? Like, why are we, when someone comes to drop an animal off, why are we treating them poorly when that is our role? That's why we're here, is to help them. And so by being more open and understanding and really getting off of our high horse and not being elitist, we have really, that's where we made the biggest growth in our service to help animals. We used to help around 1,200 a year. And now with all the safety net programs and us really working with our community, we help over 5,000.
Mm-hmm. A much bigger, broader scope of services that you're doing now. And that 5,000 isn't all in the shelter. That's
right.
Out in the community. Yeah.
Yeah, only about 1,900 in the building. But I also like to point out that even though our numbers are low, that doesn't mean that we're helping less animals in the shelter. It's just that they get adopted faster than they did before. And that before, a long time ago, like seven, eight years ago, when you went in and we were really full, it wasn't because we had more animals we were helping. They were just staying longer.
Mm-hmm. It's back on the no shame policy. So you occasionally get posters on Facebook that are like passing judgment on other posters.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's not...
It's quite an environment.
Well, and you know, we tell other shelters, we're like, you just have to stay on it and it will change. I mean, that's the one, I think, another beautiful thing about home to home is that nobody in animal welfare has really provided surrenderers a voice. And so you just look at them as bad. But realistically, there's so many beautiful stories of why people need to surrender. We've had two people that posted, that at least that I know of, that were both terminally ill. I mean, what a great gift to be able to figure that out for your pet rather than having to take it into a shelter. Mm-hmm. So it really has changed the conversation, I feel like, in our community. I really do look at our community as this example of a compassionate, caring, really cooperative community when it comes to animals.
Mm-hmm. You know, the other end of that policy, though, or that whole subject of no shame, do you hear from people that see animals that are being held in really wretched conditions, like a dog that's always on a chain or a horse that's held in some tiny little enclosure? Do you feel complaints or?
People will call us, and unfortunately, we don't have any authority in our area, so we refer them over to the municipality that they're in, so either city police or the sheriff's department, and leave it up to them. But one thing that does happen quite a bit with the shame is we had somebody who, there was a dog being left overnight, and instead of having a conversation with the owner, they stole their dog and then brought the dog to us. And they were really upset that we called the owner to give him his dog back, but we can't support theft. And realistically, I think I would encourage people to really take a step back on their judgment and think, you know, obviously this man is going through something right now. So why not ask, like, are you working? What happened was his job changed and he was working at night. Well, this person was at home. So why not let the dog come stay with you overnight and bring, you know, like, we're a great community. So why not help each other rather than passing judgment and bringing in the authorities when there might be a really great solution there?
Yeah. And there are some, I've seen some websites that encourage like dog sharing or, you know, if you have a dog that you know that it could be socializing with somebody during your work day, you can find somebody that maybe wants to hang out with your dog.
Yeah. And then dogs at large, a lot of the time people get really upset. You see it on Facebook. You're like, that dog's been out four times. That owner needs to get rid of the dog. And so for us, what we do is that we talk to the owner and find out why the dog keeps getting out. And so there was one woman, the dog kept getting out and people were really upset about it. Call the police, all this stuff. Well, it ends up that she was an elderly woman, had just had a stroke. She was unable to, with her hand, hook the latch on the collar. And she said that, you know, this dog had been with her since a puppy. They're both in their older years. And this dog was like her best friend, and they would go for walks together. But she was having a hard time containing the dog when it would just let it out to go to the bathroom. And on occasion, it would wander. And so when all of a sudden people hear the story, they're like, oh my gosh, how can I help? Can I go fix the fence? And that's what happened. We get a group of people, they go fix the fence. So it's just really taking a step back and saying, let's ask logical questions and figure out what might be happening that I can contribute to helping.
Okay, we are officially out of time now, but Mandy Evans, Executive Director of the Panhandle Animal Shelter, and Steve Nybank, Pondere Dog Park Project Manager, volunteer. Thank you both for coming in today. Give us your website if people want to check out, get more information about the shelter.
Yeah, it's PASIdaho.org.
Okay, and thanks again for coming in. I have just a couple announcements here. Next week on the morning show, the Tuesday show, you can join our host, Julie Calamine, and she'll be talking with Bob Turner of the American Long Distance Hiking Association. And then on next Wednesday, I'll be back here on the microphone with my co-host, Susie Prez. We're going to be talking with folks from the Community Assistance League and as well as folks from the Lake Pondere Waterkeeper Program. And with that, we're going to be signing off now. It's a beautiful day out there. I hope you get out there and enjoy it. And here's a little bit on Sunshine from the Beatles. It's called Here Comes the Sun. Have a great week.